Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I'm your host, Paul Gant, alongside Jeremy Espy. And for the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. And if you have an opinion, the number is to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant, and you can send messages to the show on Twitter at GoForItGant. We got a big show for you coming up today. Hurricane day here in the East Coast. Hurricane Irene. Big show coming up for you. Expected to be joined by New York Giants great Carl Banks, and Carl's going to stop on by and talk about his new fashion line that he has coming out. And it should be interesting to get Carl's take on the New York Giants as well. Also, NFL Hall of Famer, recent NFL Hall of Famer, 2011 NFL Hall of Famer inductee, Mr. Chris Hamburger, will stop on by. And we're going to get Chris's thoughts on going to the Hall of Fame and everything about being in the Hall of Fame. I mean, that has to be a great honor. And also, we're going to be joined by actress, model, and Miss Asia USA, one of the contestants in the Miss Asia USA pageant, Camilla Lim, and we're going to get her thoughts on that pageant and much, much more. So make sure you stick around. Good show here today. I mean, it is a hurricane weekend, so you don't have really much to do if you're in the East Coast. So you might as well slide on over to blogtalkradio.com/pgant or call on in at 646-727-3070 and listen to this beautiful, great, lovely show. Jeremy, how are you, sir?
Paul, I just put the deck furniture down, you know, filled up the gas tanks and parked the cars and here for the next 2 hours. And then after that, you know, I'm back on the Internet tracking Irene.
And the love, well, not lovely. I mean, Mother Nature. If you've been on the East Coast, I know we talk sports, but let's talk about this right now. If you've been on the East Coast this past week, you had a tornado, not a tornado, you had an earthquake. I felt the rumblings, and I didn't know what was going on. I thought somebody was sitting down somewhere, and I thought somebody was shaking. No, the earth was moving. And so we got an earthquake, and then we got a hurricane sliding up the East Coast. So there's a lot of stuff going on right now weather-wise if you're in the East Coast, and a lot of stuff going on if you're a Philadelphia Eagles fan. The Philadelphia Eagles, the dream team, as Vince Young would like to call it, the Philadelphia Eagles, this ball club, I mean, they beat the Cleveland Browns, bounced back. I mean, everybody looked better this time around. The defense was a lot more solid this time around. I mean, they didn't get thrown around like they did against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Everything was good defensively. But if you look at the offensive side of the ball, I have some concerns. I have some concerns. And one of those concerns is the offensive line. It's, you know, you got the news, Ryan Harris, the right tackle that they brought in from the Broncos, he may need surgery, back surgery. So he may not be in the mix. And then you have Winston Justice, who's still coming back from injury. So you have some unsettledness, if you will, on the right side of the line. Danny Watkins is a rookie, so you're going to expect some rookie errors and rookie mistakes. You got Kelsey as the center at this point. We'll see if Jamal Jackson beats him out. But the right side is a little bit in flux for the Philadelphia Eagles. And if you watch the game, Michael Vick took a beating. And I was saying to myself, if he continues to take a beating like this, he won't even make it out of the preseason. I mean, he took a big-time beating, a big-time beating. And he can't continue to take those type of hits if he wants to play this whole season. The Eagles can't afford for him to take those type of hits if they want him in the mix for the whole season. It just can't happen. It just cannot happen. That offensive line looked very porous, and it struggled a little bit. Michael Vick took a lot of hits the other night. Took a lot of big-time hits the other night. And that one play where he took the threw the interception was called back because of roughing the passer penalty, but he took a solid hit. And then you had the game analyst, Brian Baldinger, who came out and said, you know what, it's time to get Michael Vick out of here. If I was Andy Reid, I would take Michael Vick out of the football game because of the beating and because of the amount of hits he took in that football game. It's going to have to get better if the Philadelphia Eagles want to be that dream team and want to be that team who wants to, of course, win their division and ultimately get the best record in their conference and ultimately get to the Super Bowl and ultimately become Super Bowl champions. That offensive line has to get better. Michael Vick can hide some of the flaws on the offensive line, but ultimately he's going to have to sit back in that pocket. And at some point, he's going to have to be protected, and if he's not, and it's going to be a problem. You got the New York Giants with Justin Tuck coming off that right end, Jason Pierre-Paul coming at you. I mean, you got some guys, DeMarcus Ware coming at you. So you got some big-time pass rushers in the NFC East, and you're going to have to see them at least two times. So they better get that offensive line right. And like I said, we're going to be joined by Carl Banks shortly, but if you look at it, one thing the New York Giants do well, and that the Eagles have struggled with, the run. The New York Giants run the ball very well, and New York Giants rush the passer very well. So the two things that the New York Giants do well, the Eagles do not do very well. Go ahead.
Now, I know my employment's always on the line here, so if I still am the co-host and I get a word in, two questions, though. Number one, isn't this, though, almost every year Andy Reid's been in Philadelphia, isn't this the rap on the Eagles every year? They have a horrible preseason, or it's certainly a very structured preseason. They usually wind up 2-2, usually a lot of questions with the offensive line, usually a lot of questions with either their defensive line or their linebackers. I mean, this has been the rap of the Reid regime for over a decade.
Well, offensive line was one of the solid areas during the Reid era. I mean, not these past two seasons, but before we had Runyon and Thomas as the bookends. I mean, you had a decent offensive line with the Philadelphia Eagles. They've always been decent. I don't think that's necessarily been a problem for the Eagles these past years until now, recently.
I think maybe your memory is looking at the last couple of years. Certainly, they've had talented. I think what you mean to say is they've had some talented players with Trey Thomas and John Runyon throughout the decade plus of Reid. They had talented players, but be honest, Paul. I mean, pretty much every year going into every Eagle season. Yeah, certainly with a guy like John Runyon or a guy like Trey Thomas, but due in large part, there's always been questions of, who's going to, even when they brought in, Steve Everett early on, and very early on in Andy Reid, there's always been, it's the middle of the line more so than the tackles. I think this year, though, much like last year, they really are struggling, I think, as a unit, as an offensive line, to find their way. I wouldn't be as concerned. I think for Vic, the book is out on him, Paul. I think defenses are trying to bring it, back to more of a Atlanta Falcons type. I mean, if you get him pressure really up the middle, they're going to force him once out on one side or on another. And that's always been the downside of Vic. I think if nothing else, too, this is a strike shortened season. So teams like the Eagles, who supposedly are a dream team, but all new players, it's hard to mesh when instead of having a month of practice, in Lehigh, they had 2 weeks. And some of these guys inside of 2 weeks had 2 days because of their restrictions based on the labor agreement.
Well, I look at it in this way. I mean, I know what teams had been trying to do is force Michael Vick right. I mean, he's not as comfortable throwing the football right and throwing across his body. If you send him left, he's comfortable throwing the football. If you send him right, he's not as comfortable. And he tends to struggle more often than not. If you send him right, he's going to try to run. So, I mean, yes, teams, they started to blitz him near the end of the season. And they started to blitz him with D-backs. I mean, the Minnesota Vikings, you remember that play in week 15, where Antoine Winfield blitzed him, stripped the ball, and scooped it up and ran in for a touchdown. I mean, he was blitzed by a corner. And the Giants, they blitzed a lot of D-backs also against Michael Vick because, you know, the guy has speeds, and a D-back can counter that speed a lot better than a linebacker. So, I mean, they started to do that near the end of the season, and it was effective. It truly was effective. But overall, I think, and I just think if you're a Philadelphia Eagles fan, you got to be concerned about those hits that Michael Vick has taken. There has to be a concern about those hits. He cannot take those type of hits and be upright for the whole season. And it can. It won't happen. It just will not happen. You cannot take that type of beatdown. You can't take that type of beatdown. If you look at Cleveland last season, they were near the bottom in team sacks. And if you look at them defensively, they were near the bottom in a few categories. So this was not a big-time defense here in Cleveland, last season at least. It was not a big-time defense. It wasn't a Steelers defense. It wasn't a New York Giants-type defense. It wasn't a big-time defense. When you talk about the Cleveland Browns, and they had some – they had pressure. They put pressure on Michael Vick, and they had him on the run. And I remember the first – what was it? Maybe it was like a third down in the first drive, I believe. It was almost like a jailbreak when he fumbled the football and Cleveland had recovered. It was a jailbreak. I mean, Michael Vick cannot have a shot there to dodge and duck and do anything to anybody. So, and if that's a guy that can do it, that's Michael Vick. He's a guy that can dodge, duck, maneuver, and run away from just about anybody. And it was a jailbreak. It was an absolute jailbreak with Michael Vick, and he had no shot whatsoever. I just think at this point, and you're right with the lockout shortened season, off season, I should say, with the lack of OTAs, mini camps, and all those things, some teams are going to mesh a lot better than others and a lot quicker and a lot faster than others. And when you, like you made a great point, when you bring in a whole bunch of different guys, Colin Jenkins, Nnamdi, you name it, a whole bunch of guys, they brought them in. When you bring all these guys in, it's not like basketball where you can kind of just throw guys in there and if they're a superstar, it's going to work. I mean, let's look at Miami. You're throwing a LeBron James and a Chris Bosh in that mix, and it's going to work. If you threw LeBron James back at Cleveland, I mean, look how good Cleveland was and look how good they would be if they had him back. So that's just the way – that's the differences in the game. But I just think you cannot let that man take a beating. You cannot let Michael Vick –
I'll agree with you. I felt like, number one, I mean, I know they wanted to get, it was a third game, and it's always it seems like sometimes they have the predictability is part of their problem. They really, I felt like they waited. They were lucky, to not have an incident. I probably would have got him out of there a little earlier because the offense really was not playing well. And Michael Vick included. I mean, he was a little erratic, jumping around in the pocket, and you know, they're lucky they didn't get caught, you know, so to speak, in a bad situation.
Well, you're right. I mean, you're right. I mean,
you look at what they're doing over in Indianapolis, you know, with Peyton Manning and the uncertainty there. And that's why I say, and the fact is, you know, I'm not too confident that Vince Young is going to be an impact player should he need to be.
And if you looked at that game, Mike Kafka came in after Michael Vick. So I don't know if Mike Kafka possibly will beat out Vince Young as the backup quarterback. But you have to also remember with Vince Young, he's involved in a new offense now. This is something new for him. And Mike Kafka has been in the system for the past few years now. This is a new offense for for Vince Young. So he's got to get comfortable and got to get used to a lot of different things. And again, being that he signed so late and being that there was a lockout, it's kind of a bang-bang situation. You've got to learn quickly, on the fly, bang, 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 bang. And you look at it, and that's not going to be very easy. That's not going to be an easy situation. And hopefully, we won't have to see Vince Young or Mike Kafka, but Michael Vick has not played a 16-game season in his career. So, with that being said, more than likely, one of those guys may have to step in, and that may be the reality of the situation. One of these guys may have to step in, and we'll see what happens moving forward with this whole situation. And I just hope that, you know, that the Eagles can keep this man upright for the preseason. Hopefully he'll get through the preseason.
Well, I mean, he'll play what? I mean, you know, he'll play what, a series or two maybe next week. And going into the season, you know, and that's what I say. I think they really do need to look at, you know, the Eagles. They're not making upgrades on the offensive line, but I will say this, you know, running the ball a little bit more in the beginning of the season, if this is going to be their offensive line, it's certainly a smart move. I mean, I think of all their additions, I said this last week, I think Ronnie Brown was probably their smartest addition. I think Ronnie Brown will be the one guy that probably will have the largest or can have the largest impact in game one. Because I think, you know, between, you know, his abilities and the fact that, you know, the Eagles, a runner like, he's an established runner. He comes in, he gives you 60, 80 yards. He should be averaging 60, 80 yards every game.
If he gets the carries, and I don't think he necessarily will get those type of carries in this offense, especially with the back that you have with LeSean McCoy. But, I mean, I agree. Ronnie Brown, I like what I saw so far from him in this preseason. I've been impressed with what I saw. And also, Cullen Jenkins has played very well, very good as well. I mean, he's been active. He's been around the football. He's been a beast to this point. And, you know, like I said, I mean, you brought in a lot of talent. I mean, there's no denying that. Nnamdi, Rogers, Cromartie, Jenkins, Cullen Jenkins. You brought in a lot of talent, but you do have some holes and some questions. The linebackers, it has become a question. I mean, Casey Matthews has struggled during this preseason. And so that could be an issue as we move into the season. And that's Kirk Morrison actually signed with the Buffalo Bills, and he might not have been a bad pickup for the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, Kirk Morrison played for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and he's a solid middle linebacker. He may not have been a bad pickup for the Philadelphia Eagles, but be as it may, the whole thing going forward with the Philadelphia Eagles is they have to shore up a few things. And again, and everybody's a little behind, but I think ultimately, if they can get this thing right, offensive line-wise and defensive line-wise and stopping the run and things of that nature, they should be good to go moving forward. They should be. A lot of talent there. They should be good to go moving forward. And also, speaking of teams that may not be good to go, and that's the Indianapolis Colts. You have Peyton Manning, who the Colts are thinking about activating shortly, but will he be ready to play? Will he be ready to play? And you have to question whether he will be after the signing of Kerry Collins, and they brought him out of retirement. He just retired recently with the Titans, and now he's back. The Indianapolis Colts signed him and brought him out of retirement. If you look at the Colts, if Peyton Manning is not there at any point in the season, this team may struggle. This team will struggle. This team will definitely struggle. You know, you got a lot of things involved with Peyton Manning, being that there was a lockout. He couldn't receive the same type of treatment from his team doctors. That's an issue. That's a big-time issue. And that's a problem. So you look at that, and you look at the whole situation, and you say, you got to, if you're the Colts, you got to be a little concerned.
Well,
it's the
I think that goes without saying. I mean, long-term, you know, a lot of this is yet to be played out. So how concerned can the Colts be? I think the downside of this, again, is in a strike-shortened year, and, you know, there's not a lot of movement. I will say this. I thought, I give, again, kudos to Reggie Wayne. I think, you know, they bring in a guy like Kerry Collins, they bring in, I think, arguably the biggest name and theoretically, most successful quarterback or backup quarterback. But a guy like Kerry Collins in this offense, I can't see how he's going to be able to make an impact. It's a bang-bang offense, and they have a lot of a quarterback, and that's never really been the strength of Kerry Collins. I mean, certainly he has a good arm. He's an established quarterback. But, I mean, he doesn't throw slants. He doesn't throw short, you know, and taking command of the offense the way Peyton does. Go ahead.
He's not Peyton Manning. And you look at the Colts situation, Peyton Manning is the guy who stirs the drink in Indianapolis. He is that guy. He. You look at the Colts last season, I mean, they struggled with injuries big time. Austin Collie in and out of the lineups with the concussion. Dallas Clark gone for most of the season. Joseph Addai in and out of the lineup. Pierre Garçon also some injuries. I mean, you look at that situation with the Indianapolis Colts. The one constant and the one thing that kept them going was the great Peyton Manning. Without that, without the great Peyton Manning, you have a bad situation in Indianapolis. You have a team, 5-6, maybe 7-win team at the most. I mean, Curtis Painter is not the answer. And quite frankly, Kerry Collins truly is not the answer either at this point of his career. And Curtis Painter is not the answer either. So a lot of not answers. A lot of not answers there with the Indianapolis Colts, and that's a problem. That is a big-time problem. If Peyton Manning's not there, it's a whole different world. And, again, it's the neck. And the neck is, dangerous. It's dangerous. I mean, you start talking necks, you start talking a lot of uncertainty when you start talking about necks.
Yeah,
you really
absolutely.
Do.
And you have to wonder. I mean, you know, you have to wonder ultimately when or where if it's serious. If that's a problem. It's a guessing game, and I don't think anybody wants to get involved in a guessing game with regards to Peyton, especially Peyton Manning, because here's a guy who, I mean, pretty much for his entire career, Paul, has been relatively healthy or more one of the more relatively healthy players. So
relatively. I mean, you got the streak, 227 straight games. So you're talking Brett Favre like healthy.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean and that's why I say this certainly, and I think it's coming as a shock that for this Colts organization certainly, and that's why I say you could tell they were not. I don't think they were as prepared as they probably should have been. I guess my only question would be, why didn't they, they should have known about this all offseason. They should have been preparing for this.
Well, I mean, again, a guy who is as durable as Peyton Manning, you probably don't expect to lose him. And also, you look at it, I mean, he's Peyton Manning. And he's always been there. But one thing you got to, they do have a decision to make whether to activate him or put him on the PUP list, PUP, physically unable to perform. You put him there, he's got to sit out the first 6 weeks of the season. So I think even if he's not ready to go game one, you have to activate him anyway. Maybe he's ready to go game two or game three. But he says he'll be ready game one. But he also said he'd be ready to play in one of these preseason games. And that's been ruled out at this point. So it's been a long process with Peyton Manning, and so we'll see what happens moving forward with Peyton Manning. But if you're the Indianapolis Colts, and if you're, I guess, a fantasy football drafter, you have some decisions to make when it comes to Peyton Manning. Do you go there and draft a Peyton Manning in a fantasy league? You have to think about it. And if you're the Indianapolis Colts, what happens now with Peyton Manning out of the lineup? You turn to Kerry Collins. You turn to Curtis Painter. Not great options. Kerry Collins, a solid quarterback, like you pointed out. But if we're talking about winning championships, and I think that's what they're talking about in Indy, you're not going to do that with Kerry Collins. But hopefully, if you're a Colts fan, Peyton Manning, if he misses time, misses a couple games, 2 to 3, 3 at the most, and hopefully he's back, and hopefully Kerry Collins can or Curtis Painter can keep things moving for those 2 to 3 games. Hopefully. Hopefully. But, you know, you look back, you look, go ahead.
I mean, my question to you, Paul, is again, like, how do they not know, how does this organization not know that Peyton Manning, you know, is this injured? It's almost like they're more surprised than anybody.
Well, technically speaking, he could not have any interaction with the organization. So, technically speaking, they wouldn't know or they couldn't know. Now, obviously, obviously they played whisper down the lane. You would think somebody played whisper down the line. You would think that. You would think that somebody's playing that game. I see what you're saying.
But if nothing else, Paul, the minute he walked into the camp, you know, over a month ago, they should have been on top. That's got to be, if you're there, that's got to be priority number one. 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way down to infinity.
And I was wrong, Kerry. Peyton Manning did say that he would not play the final two preseason games. I thought he said he would play one, but he did say that he would not play the final two preseason games. But he got this surgery back in May, and again, he couldn't work out with team trainers or doctors. So that's a problem. That's a problem, and he was not allowed to do so. He was not allowed to do so. He wasn't. He was not. And he officially ruled himself out this past week against the Bengals. So he ruled himself out for the preseason finale. So he's got till September 11th if he wants to play in the game to get his neck, his mind, and everything right. He has all that stuff. He has that time to do it. And hopefully he will do it if you're a Colts fan. And I would, you know, I would like to see Peyton Manning, you know, continue that streak and that Iron Man streak. I would like for him to continue to play and continue to build on that. But, again, you got to be a little concerned when it comes to next. You got to be. You got to be a little concerned when it comes to next. That's not something that you play with. A neck is a dangerous thing, especially as an NFL football player. It's a dangerous thing. A dangerous thing. And if you've got a guy struggling with some neck issues, it could be a big-time problem and a serious problem. And hopefully, again, if you are an Indianapolis Colts fan, hopefully things will get taken care of in Peyton's neck. Will be right, hopefully. Hopefully. But, again, a neck is a neck and the dangerous thing to play with. And speaking of injuries, you had the New York Giants who lost their cornerback, Terrell Thomas. He's out for the year with an ACL injury. And that, my friend, is a big-time loss. You're talking about a guy who's come off two straight five-interception seasons, a guy who was on the verge of becoming a Pro Bowler, and a guy who actually was on this show a few months back. And so Terrell Thomas, he's out for the year, torn ACL, and that's big. That is big-time problem for the New York Giants. And you look at the Giants right now, a lot of injuries. Not the injuries per se, but you know, O.C. Uemura, he's going to be out for a few weeks. You got Terrell Thomas, obviously, out for the year. You got a team that did not resign, did not bring back Kevin Boss, or Kevin Boss went elsewhere and went to Oakland. Steve Smith went to Philly. So, and those were Eli's boys. So those were his boys. Steve Smith and Kevin Boss were his boys, and they're gone. They're gone. And obviously Terrell Thomas is gone as well, and then not to mention Plaxico Burress signed with the New York Jets. The New York Giants, they may have some issues going into this 2011 season. And missing those guys, missing the Terrell Thomases of the world, missing Kevin Bosses of the world, and the Steve Smiths of the world. Those are big-time losses for the New York Giants. Big time. And OCU Miura as well. Big-time loss. So I think there has to be some concern if you're a New York Giants fan right now. Would you echo those sentiments?
Well, I mean, yeah, you know, they got hit hard. I think the biggest problem that they're facing is that you don't want to sit there and say because they didn't re-sign Plattsburgh Burrs, because they certainly don't, you know, certainly Plattsburgh has yet to prove that he is going to be able to be who they lost. But their problem is they only didn't fill his spot. But I think, you know, Steve Smith was like you said, he was a money man. People really don't realize, especially during when Plax was there, and especially last year, he really was starting to come into his own. And I think the fact that you heard some of the people in the Giants organization, most notably Coughlin, after he left, that you could kind of tell there was certainly a little salt on the shoulder. And the fact that they did not upgrade. I don't think they upgraded a single position. And they have Umiura walking into a season where he's pretty much disgruntled. And now they lost one of their best, arguably one of their better cornerbacks. And it's too late in the season to run out and say, well, we're going to just replace him, you know, with this guy, especially considering right down the road, the Eagles are sitting with arguably the three best cornerbacks in the NFC.
Yeah, you're right. And there have been rumors that Yuselio Hanson, a guy that the Eagles signed a few years back to decent money, he may be on the trade market. That may be a guy they look at. And you wonder, do the Philadelphia Eagles trade within the division and give up Hanson? Do they trade within the division? I would say that I don't know if I would do that if I'm the Philadelphia Eagles. And another guy may be Asante Samuel. Again, probably a trade the Eagles won't make either. And speaking of Asante Samuel, he had an interception against the Cleveland Browns the other night. And when he had that interception, I said to myself, that is one of the reasons you do not trade an Asante Samuel. He is a playmaker. He makes plays. He just finds a way to be around the ball. He has a knack for the football. You don't trade that type of guy. You don't get rid of that type of guy. Nobby's great. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie has been a Pro Bowler. But none of them, if you look at a Nobby, not a big-time interception guy. If you look at Asante Samuel, there's not many. He's a home run hitting type of corner. He's the type of guy if he gets an interception, he could take it to the house. He has that playmaking ability. He is a playmaker. He is a playmaker, that Asante Samuel. And he proved it the other night against the Cleveland Browns. And so I have to say, that is one of the reasons why you don't trade Asante Samuel. He belongs on this Philadelphia Eagles roster. And he's a playmaker. And those guys don't grow on trees. Playmakers don't grow on trees. They grow in bellies, women's bellies, but they do not grow on trees. And so Asante Samuel, definitely, if you're an Eagles fan, and if I'm Eagles management, Asante Samuel definitely belongs in that midnight green. Definitely. No arguments there, I don't think. Are you arguing that, Jeremy?
Well, no, I mean, and I agree. I think that, you know, that certainly the Eagles are, I think a lot of it is always the media. People want to see, you know, they have to sell papers, and I think we all respect that. But the Eagles are in no hurry to make a move here and trade someone just because, or because people say, oh, this would be a good idea. I mean, I think, as you said, there's, what's the real advantage there to the Eagles? I don't think anybody yet has been able to say the clear, you know, advantage is what. Maybe some draft picks, sure, but draft picks at what cost? You know, who they're giving up depth. One play away, somebody, you know, tweaks an ankle, a hamstring, an ACL, and the Eagles still, they go into their, you know, their second or third tier guy, and they got plenty. So I look at it and I say to myself, if I'm the Eagles organization right now, even a guy like Yuselio Hanson, I agree with you. If for nothing else, for the beginning of the season, you don't run to trade anyone, they have plenty of draft picks for the next couple of years, number one. And number two, I think the NFL has seen with regards to this season, for nothing else other than it just seems to be, you want to blame, you know, the lockout, you want to blame the shortened practices. Injuries are coming at every angle. And you know, who knows who's next. And they have a depth that most teams won't be able to easily duplicate out of position. So I feel like if I'm an Eagles team that I have this competitive advantage, I'm going to keep that advantage as long as you can. And especially at a skill position like cornerback, you know, defensive back, where they have for, I mean, a lot of it for the Eagles will also hinge on the fact that they have some questions with regard to the fact that they don't have the greatest linebacking core. So, and their defensive line, where it's, yes, it's all new, it's been retooled, there's certainly no guarantee that the retooling of that, you know, defensive line is going to produce dollars and cents. On the other hand, I don't think anyone's going to argue that, you know, the acquisition of Nnamdi was bad, or potentially that may not, you know, that was a silly or stupid move if you're the Eagles. So, I mean, go ahead.
And I look at the Nnamdi situation, and I obviously you got to like the acquisition of Nnamdi because he's a very good, one of the better corners in the game. But it wasn't a move that I'm saying, you know what, let's book it, they're going to the Super Bowl. That wasn't that type of move for me personally, because I felt like one of the weaknesses the Eagles had was that right side corner position. And I thought by trading for Rodgers Cromartie, you kind of solidified and shored that situation up. So it wasn't I wasn't like overly excited and you know, jumping around, running around saying the Eagles are now Super Bowl champions. That's not really the way I felt. I kind of felt like with that move, yes, it's a good move, but I don't want to say Nnamdi's a luxury, because he's a very good corner and he's one of the better corners in the game. But it was not, I felt like it was not an ultra area of need after bringing in Rodgers Cromartie. Now, if you don't bring in Rodgers Cromartie, you bring in Nnamdi, it is, you're saying, you know what, that's a great situation, that's a big-time move, that's a great move, and that's a good job by the Philadelphia Eagles, definitely. And even now, you still say great move, great acquisition, and that's a great job by the Philadelphia Eagles. But you also say, in my opinion, that it was not a move that was necessarily needed. Especially after bringing in Rodgers Cromartie, it became basically a luxury. I don't want to call Nnamdi a luxury, because he's the best, one of the best cornerbacks in the game. But having three corners like that becomes a luxury. And you know, some people could argue that you're investing a lot of money in three positions, and you know that's an issue as well.
Yeah, but the Eagles have done, and they have, I think, as many of the other organizations, Eagles have made that kind of bread and butter of how they retool. They you know, as far back, again, and you look at this Andy Reid era, you know, he has really made the cornerstone of his success is having a defense that is very well tooled on the outside. And I think he, again, when you look at a guy who's been around as long as he has and has built somewhat of, let's say, a recipe for success, you know, they don't have the ability every year to go out there and get a game-changing cornerback. And I think the Eagles have, though, proven that they know the model to success when it's out there on the corners, what the value that can add to your defense. The last couple of years, sure, you know, they had Asante Samuel, but the other corner, you know, it was good, not great. But when they have lockdown corners is when their defenses throughout the Andy Reid tenureship was at its best, when you don't have to worry about, when you know, I mean, they're not going to get beat. So in terms of this defense, or in terms of an Andy Reid defense, this is actually, I think, almost the first for him, where the entire defensive back. I mean, it's so deep. You know, I think this is arguably his deepest, defensive backfield of his stay here in Philadelphia, and arguably the most talented.
I don't think I would argue in terms of talent. I might argue in terms of depth. I mean, because now you remember the days of Bobby Taylor and Troy Vincent, and then behind that you had Lito Shepherd and Sheldon Brown. Kind of, they were also in the mix there. So, in terms of depth, I would agree. Arguably, not depth. They had some depth at that corner position. But in terms of talent, I think you might be onto something there in saying that this is arguably the most talented set of corners that Andy Reid has had during his era. And, I mean, Lito and Sheldon, during that era, they were two very good corners, Pro Bowl-type corners. And then you had Yoselio Hansen, who is a decent corner. He's not a bad corner. He's an okay corner. You had him there also in the mix. So you had a lot of different guys there. But in terms of straight talent, I think arguably this is probably – the most talented set of corners that Andy Reid has had during his era. And you can argue that this is probably the most talented group of corners in the game of football right now. You can make that argument, and I think you might win that argument more often than not. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and that's why I say, You have to give the Eagles a lot of credit, because this, I think, was one of the big – this was, what the Eagles have always designed. They were very big fans of certainly getting out there and building cornerstone, defensive backs, and certainly, premier defensive backs that really changed their opponents. And also Jeffrey Lurie, spoke about this in his speech, was – they recognize that they need to be able to match up against three receivers, of Green Bay, and this, he hoped this was going to be what allowed them to do that.
And you look at that Green Bay team; they have three very good receivers in Jennings, Driver, and Jordy Nelson. And then you have they have some decent receivers, and everybody seems to sleep and forget about the Green Bay Packers. JaMychal Finley is back, everybody. Ryan Grant is back, everybody. Those guys were Pro Bowl caliber players, and they're back in the mix for the Green Bay Packers. So that team may be better. Not maybe better, probably will be better, at least record-wise. But you're going to always have that team that kind of comes out of nowhere. And we'll see what team that is going to be. Will it be the Arizona Cardinals with Kevin Cobb in the mix? Not sure. Don't know how much I love Kevin Cobb. To be honest with you, I really don't know if Kevin Cobb is a Pro Bowl or franchise caliber quarterback. I don't think anybody really truly knows that. But, you look at that, I'm not really too sure about that. But that could be a team that comes out of nowhere and it kind of surprises some folks. Maybe the Minnesota Vikings with Donovan McNabb in the mix. And again, we all know my love for Donovan McNabb and how much I'm a big fan of Donovan McNabb. There's no doubt about that. I'm a big-time fan of Donovan McNabb.
We all know that. Everybody.
That's if you forgot. But I look at Donovan, and I'm not sure. I said to you last year I thought Donovan had 2 to 3 years of good football left in him. I'm not too sure if that's the case at this point. I do think he does go in a great situation with Minnesota, with Adrian Peterson in that run game. I think that definitely is a big-time help for Donovan. But I'm not too sure if he will kind of make that next step and kind of get himself right again. I'm not too sure about that.
No, I mean, let me help you, Paul, his career. I'm going to tell you right now, Donovan McNabb's career is over. I told you last week, he's walking into the offensive line that retired Brett Favre. And, a lot of people said they wouldn't want to be the president after George Bush. And, you know, this country isn't exactly doing that great. And I'm telling you, you don't want to be the quarterback after a guy who was retired by an offensive line. And this is, it's not a knock on an organization, meaning the Vikings. It's not a knock on their offensive line. They're in the middle of a rebuild. And I don't think they wanted to have that season happen the way it happened. But the fact is, they are a very young offensive line. And you know, they certainly need some work. So if you're Don McNabb, take the money and get on the sidelines. Like, take the hit to the chin is what I'm going to tell you.
And we'll get back to that conversation very shortly now. But let's bring in now actress, model, the lovely Camilla Lim. Camilla, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. And Camilla, in reading your bio, one thing that stood out to me was how athletic you are. I mean, most of your life you were a swimmer. You took Taekwondo. And you obviously love athletics. Where did the passion for athletics come from?
I think honestly, physical activity itself, and then you can express your feelings and then your passion through that. I think that's, the most fascinating thing about things. Sports to dance. I mean, I honestly love dancing, but when it comes to pro athletic people and where they do their professional activity, I think it's a lot to do with the discipline.
Right.
So.
And one interesting thing about you is one of the reasons you got into acting is you got injured while dancing. Talk about that.
I really wish that I can say something really dramatic and a heartfelt story, but accidents are sometimes it comes from every different angle. And then I was just preparing for a dance competition, and after having a quick bites with friends and other dancers, I fell down the stairs. It just comes from most not expected place. So it was really a devastating situation, but I really do love the fact that you can express the feelings, and it's the art side of it. So I guess I fell in love with the performance itself.
And then you look at it, Camilla. I mean, obviously, you turn pretty much lemons sort of into lemonade, if you to steal an expression, an old-time expression, in a lot of ways of doing that and kind of taking that injury situation and kind of moving it to now you're acting and you moved to Hollywood and you're doing your thing out in Hollywood.
I'm working at it one by one. So, started from the acting and then from doing indie film production work to I think actors especially need to be well around from every different angle. I mean, that's just my approach. So I'm just working a lot of different things at the moment.
How's the transition been, from your prior career now to getting into acting?
What is it again? I'm sorry?
In terms of how have you dealt with the transition, to getting into acting and, as you said, getting into different roles?
I honestly think it was actually a big challenge. Well, first is because English is my second language. And then second, I'm more comfortable with expressing myself through the body language, not so much with the second language and I got to talk to people, interaction, all this stuff. But, I have professional ballroom dancing background, which has all kind of different emotions. I mean, all the dancers are very expressive music people. And it wasn't really that hard. It's because, your heart goes for the expression.
Right.
Getting up of another person. So, yeah, it wasn't so hard. I mean, I would have to say the biggest challenge was the language.
And that definitely can be a big-time challenge, and you really truly can't discount that. So, how much of a barrier was that for you for a long time? When did you finally feel comfortable with the English language?
When I stopped caring so much about it.
Right.
Yeah, because when I started taking accent reduction classes and stuff, and then the biggest thing was really be aware of where I talk. And then sometimes that gets you in your head. You're worrying about, like, am I saying this right? And then, you know, second doubt yourself. And then, you know, always like a half bit late. But when you kind of stop care too much, but then still try to make other person understand what you're saying, I think,
right,
you know, it works so much better. Do you guys understand what
we're
I'm
talking
saying right now?
Yeah, definitely. You're doing very well. Talking to actress, model Camilla Lim. And Camilla, right now, you were involved in a beauty pageant, Miss Asia USA, and talk about that. How did you get involved with that?
Oh, I went to a different event. My friends were throwing events, and then honestly, they were promoting the pageant. They were promoting the, you know, pageant itself to the other different, like, audience. And then I got to know that producer Barry Axelrod, personally, and then later on he contacted me to join the pageant. So it was actually at the very last minute. Later I found out other delegates, like, they've been preparing for this for like almost a year, and then I jumped in like 2 weeks before. So it was like definitely very challenging, but I got a lot of help from Barry to Virgilia, Virgilia Production, that had produced there. Virgilia is a very fascinating lady. And Michael Sheen, and everybody was being really supportive and helpful. So it was really an honor for me to represent Korea.
And you talked about being well-rounded, and that truly had to help when it came to this pageant.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Lucky for me that they have opening dance to, you know, walking down the aisle, modeling, and interviewing. And those things honestly came from all the things I've been doing from the background, like dancing and then, you know, teaching people. And then, you know, we go for auditions and then, you know, modeling, walking down the runway. Those things definitely help. I guess, like, it's the best thing to do as an artist is to be ready.
So Paul here, the host of the show, recently had a, you know, young baby girl. Obviously, everyone thinks she's gorgeous. Any beauty pageant, any modeling tips here for Paul?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't hear the question.
I'm sorry. Repeat the question, Jeremy.
Paul had a new baby girl recently, and I keep telling Paul she's gorgeous. We got to get her into modeling and beauty pageant. So, can you give Paul some advice as a former contestant?
Well, honestly, I really don't have too much of a knowledge with the pageant. But modeling, I think the best thing to do is, I mean, she could actually come to the fashion show I'm actually doing it this Sunday at the Wilshire and Normandy Hotel. They're having a wedding show. I think that, like, the best way is, you know, get yourself, like, a good portfolio and then just keep being out submitting and meeting people, you know. Write agency, if you, both of you, when you guys, like, happy, like, with professional level, like, it could just take you to completely different places. So, pageant, I mean, there's, like, a lot of different information, honestly, online, I would have to say. But definitely, I mean, if there's a way I could, you know, introduce the different persons and then different designers, I think becoming photographers and a designer's, like, favorite model, I think it's one of the biggest things. Because we want to constantly working.
And Camilla, I mean, you look at you now. You like you said, you did the beauty pageant. Will we see you in any other beauty pageants, or are you kind of done with this type of thing?
It was a great experience, but pageant itself is completely different world, I guess. And then When I joined the pageant, the biggest thing I noticed was how many of these girls is really, really wanting this. It's their goal, their dream. And then
right.
It was an experience for me. It was a great experience, but I think my goal is actually a different place, and then they could actually enjoy and deserve, like, they deserve more than I do. It's because, you know, it's what they really want to do.
We're talking to the lovely, the talented Camilla Lim, actress and model. And Camilla, I was looking around and I saw you. You had a nice little fight scene there on YouTube. You do some kind of stunt work. Talk about that.
I guess that being trained as like athlete, and then first time that I actually learned the martial arts was from my dad. He was drill sergeant back in Korea. So he used to drag me and my brother out like 5 in the morning to the park and trained us since we were little kids. And when I started doing acting, I realized that like I could do my own fight scene, and then that would look more real. So I just started doing the fighting and then working on some sentence. Like sometimes I have to jump like off of the, two-story building height. It was like terrifying, but it was exciting experience.
Right. And have you ever gotten hurt doing this? I mean, it seems like this would be kind of a dangerous type situation.
It's very scary at first, but it's very safe. Like where they actually prep everything, it's very prepared. So there's like a lot of people to stand by to, you know, jump in, and then, you know, it's a scary experience once you get over your inner fear, but it's not that dangerous. They're not going to put us out there, like, you know, risking their own talent. So, I mean, if you want to, maybe you can give it a try, and you'd be like, it was like a like next mountain ride.
I think I'm going to have to pass on that offer, but I definitely truly appreciate that offer. I don't want to get hurt.
No, you won't get hurt, I guarantee.
You promise?
Yeah, I can promise you.
And Camilla, right now, I mean, obviously you're in the acting world, you're in Hollywood. Do you have any new roles coming up?
Actually, we are filming this movie, No Weapons Formed Against Us, starring Tiny Lister, my big brother. Shout out for him and his monster, and Sam Sartong, and then Benjamin Mathis, and then many others. Hello?
Hello? I think you broke up there.
Yeah, I was actually mentioning to Tiny the other day. Tiny's actually my big brother, Tivo. He's really known for that Friday movie. And I haven't mentioned him. I was like, oh, my God, I have interviewed him again. And then he's like, I'm going to give a shout-out. So he told me he's a spokesperson for Monster Drink. So he makes sure that I'd be doing a shout-out for him and Monster. So shout-out for Monster and shout-out for Tiny Lister. And then director Ryan Howard.
And where can we go to find information about Camilla Lim and some of her new projects?
Currently, I'm working on a couple of fashion shows to photo shoot to film shooting. But if you go to CamillaLim.net, you can find all the work that I've been doing and then future projects and etc. And make sure to have you checked out my Facebook.
Yes, I have.
Oh, okay, great. And then Twitter, I always like post new upcoming projects, to you know, pictures from the old projects, so you can check it out there.
Okay.
If you follow me on the Facebook,
go ahead.
Huh?
Go ahead.
Make sure follow me on the Twitter so I can follow you back.
And give your Twitter handle.
It's Camilla D. Lim. It's Twitter.com. And C-A-M-I-L-L-A.
Make sure you...
I'm
make
sorry,
sure
like,
we're
like
her
all the time. Definitely.
Follow her on Twitter. She does follow back, and that's a good thing, because a lot of people, they don't really follow back.
Oh, trust
so
me,
sure
I
you...
follow back.
So make sure
back,
you follow her on Twitter. She says it. She follows back, and we'll see. We'll test her. We'll see. We'll see. I'm going to go follow you in
definitely.
The next couple
message
minutes.
Me. Message me, and then you say, like, hey, you promised you're going to follow me.
I'm going to make sure I do that. I'm going to follow you to see if she's truly, truly.
Like, Oh, trust me, I have to follow you back because I got to get you up in the, like, sun places. Get to the Magic Mountain ride.
Camilla, it was a pleasure talking to you. We wish you nothing but the best of luck moving forward, and thanks for stopping by, and good luck to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, and I hope you have a great time, and make sure you follow me back.
Will do. Camilla Lim, actress, model, and she's got a lot of great projects coming up, and make sure you support her there, and follow her on Twitter, Camilla D. Lim. That's her Twitter handle, so make sure you follow her there, and that's at Camilla D. Lim. Follow her on Twitter, and Lim is spelled L-I-M. Make sure you follow her on Twitter. Second hour of Go For starts now. Go For It, and we're going to be joined in the next couple minutes by Hall of Fame linebacker Chris Hamburger, and he was recently inducted. We're going to get his thoughts and how he feels about being inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. That's got to be an exciting thing for anybody, and he's truly definitely excited. I'm looking forward to talking to him, and hopefully, you know, he can give us some nice words of wisdom and, you know, tell us how it felt to be a Hall of Famer. And that's a beautiful thing. Being a Hall of Famer has to be a beautiful thing. That means you are the best at what you do. Not too many people can say that.
In his induction speech was actually very, very interesting. His son, certainly honored him. And I think more than anything, you know, he was very candid, very honest, speaking about he never really expected to be in the Hall of Fame. But when you looked at his numbers and you looked at, you know, his play, and certainly you got a chance to hear him speak, and with these inductions, a lot of media attention, so you get a chance to see the man who plays football, and certainly the family and his values, and he was very interesting, so it should be exciting to hear from him, and as you said, see what it's like for a guy who plays a few years after retirement to get in. I'm sure it still means the same, and he had a great induction class to go in with, and although he's a Redskin, it certainly still will be very interesting.
And Carl Banks will be joining us in the 2 o'clock hour as well. And we're going to get his thoughts on his new clothing line and some of the exciting things that he has coming on. Ooh, I can't even talk. Some of the exciting things that he has going on with his clothing line and everything. So it should be very interesting. It should be good to talk to Carl Banks, the great Carl Banks, and get his thoughts on the New York Giants, a team that with some injuries and some issues there could be in trouble. But we shall see, and we should be very interesting to get his take on that, and I'm looking forward to that one as well. I want to look at Michael Vick now, and also there was an article in ESPN, the magazine. They actually changed Michael Vick into a white guy. It's kind of interesting, though, the way they did it and the way it looked. It looked like him. It really did. But he was white. It was kind of funny. But anyway, I mean, an article about Michael Vick in ESPN, the magazine, and talking about if Michael Vick was white and essentially would, I guess, the same type of stigma be put on him. Would he be forgiven more easily if he were white? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think Michael Vick, whether it's Michael Vick or Tom Brady, I think people were looking, and a lot of these organizations, these PETA and these humane societies, I think they were looking for somebody to kind of further their cause. And when you see a guy like Michael Vick there, it's an opportunity for you to pounce on him, an opportunity to kind of further your agenda, if you will. And I think in doing that, they kind of furthered their agenda. Now, I'm not saying what Michael Vick did was right, because it truly was not right. It was wrong. It was definitely wrong, and in a lot of ways it was dumb. But, I mean, I think he has learned his lesson. Hopefully he has learned his lesson. And I'm going to say I don't think it would have mattered. And race is obviously a big part of life. There's no doubt about it. Race factors into a lot of things. But I don't think race kind of factored into this dogfighting thing. I think if he was white, black, or yellow, or any other color, I think they would have tried to make an example of him. And I think these organizations like the PETA and the Humane Societies of the world would have tried to make an example of him, because he is an athlete, and furthermore, he can help further their cause. And I think he has done that in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, well, the interesting thing was, and I completely agree with you, it was a very provocative article. I think that the media, again, took something and ran with it, and it was a shame because, you know, it's an interesting viewpoint years later, harmfully, mind you, too, years later. I think I totally agree. I don't think it matters race, creed, or color.
And we'll get back to that discussion now. But let's bring in now 2011, the newest member of the NFL Hall of Fame, Mr. Chris Hamburger. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing good, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Chris. And it's a pleasure, an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity.
And Chris, I look at your career, 9-time Pro Bowler, a 14-year career. Did you think at the end of your career that you were a Hall of Famer?
No, and I still don't, to be honest with you. It's like I've said all along. When you look at all the guys that played before I did and men that I played with and against and then guys playing now, and there's so many folks that deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, and it's just unfortunate that those folks aren't going to get nominated, let alone elected. It's just the system, and it's the way it works. And I mean, I'm thrilled to death with the honor, but I never gave it any thought.
Right. And Chris, I look at it now. I mean, you retired in 78, and it took almost 33 years for you to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. I mean, granted, at the end of your career, you knew you didn't really think it would happen, but was it even more so after all this time had passed that there was no way you would get in the Hall of Fame?
Well, I never gave it any thought, and that's a very truthful statement.
Right.
I never thought my career was that great that to where I warranted being in the Hall of Fame. And, of course, I don't know if you know all the history, but I don't think the sports writers would ever use me as their poster child when I played or even now.
Right.
I've never been – I mean, I respect all of them and what they do, but I just never got along with them real well when I was playing, that's for sure.
Right.
But you, Chris, you bring up a couple interesting points, one of which is the fact that the era in which you play in, predominantly it was one of the real growth periods for professional football, and the fact media attention was much more print. Today you have the NFL Network, NFL.com. I mean, is it fair to say that athletes of your generation, that Paul's been waiting 33 years to get in, part of that is because football back then, I mean, is leaps and bounds of what it means today?
Well, I mean, everything's relative. I mean, things are going to change over time, but certainly – today, I think professional football has much greater exposure than back when I played. So, therefore, players are getting a lot more exposure than, let's say, back in the 60s and 70s when I was running around out there.
Right. And Chris, one thing about your career, and you were running around there, and you ran around there a lot. You started 135 straight games. How did you keep yourself injury-free like that.
Well, I didn't know it was that many games. My philosophy was if I didn't hit anybody and I didn't let anybody hit me, I couldn't get hurt, and then I could play forever. And, you know, I played 14 years, and probably the last couple of years I shouldn't have even been out there playing. You just reach a point where you feel like you can do it, and yet you know that the skills are sort of falling apart, and you really shouldn't be out there anymore.
We're talking to Hall of Famer Chris Hamburger, played 14 years for the Washington Redskins. And Chris, throughout your career, you got the nickname the Hangman because of your signature clothesline tackle. At the time, Chris, did you think that tackle was dirty?
No, not at all, and I don't think it should be dirty now.
Really?
Of course, when I was playing, I think they pretty much started calling you for unnecessary roughness if you did something like that.
Right.
But, I mean, anybody that's got the ball from a defensive standpoint is fair game, and you go after them any way you can.
Well, you make the point you don't think it's dirty today. So the NFL, with their horse collar rules and all of what they've done to really theoretically protect the athlete, then talk about that.
Well, the horse collar, none of us ever tried to do that. I think it was more of an accident when it happened. I mean, you're trying to get hold of somebody with the ball any way you can, and there are occasions when that's happened, and it's going to happen in the future, and it's not intentional, but it can cause injury. And I think that the NFL has realized now that the equipment has a lot to do with it also. I mean, the guys are bigger and faster today than from when I played, but all that's relative. But I think the equipment has got to be improved, and there's no question there have been more head injuries lately, the last few years, and I don't know what all contributes to that. But I'm not so sure that back when I played, there could have been just as many, but it wasn't, the NFL just wasn't aware of it. I mean, it used to be when you got your bell rung out there and you're sitting on the sidelines and the doctor holds up two fingers and ask you how many fingers, and you say one, and he's going to say, well, that's close enough. Get back in there. So times have changed quite a bit.
In a lot of ways, do you think it's a good thing?
Oh, I do, very much so. And the NFL is on top of it. It's just a matter of controlling it during the games and staying on top of it and making some improvements in the headgear. I know they've experimented this last season, and I think they're still experimenting with some different style helmets for the men. So hopefully we'll see this kind of thing hopefully become a thing of the past, or the numbers greatly reduced as far as concussions and that type of injury.
You played in the year that we're now starting to see, and certainly in the 80s, it was just a class action lawsuit against the NFL with concussions and trauma to the head. You, in your style of play, it seems as if they've been totally able to stay away from that. And you had just brought up that you do think that there really, when you played, there was very minimal tracking, there was minimal attention paid to any kind of concussion or head injury. So what was, when you got a concussion or if you had a head injury, what was the medical course of action, you know, from a team perspective?
Well, I mean, it depended, really, it varied from team to team. And, of course, now, I mean, they've instituted some great controls where, I mean, if you are diagnosed with a concussion, I think you have to, it's not your decision. It's totally the doctor's decision when you're going to be able to go back and play, which is a good thing, because players don't want to. I mean, they want to be out there. They don't want to be sitting on the bench. But when you start looking at the number of players that have had concussions over the last few years, And when you look at the number of players that have passed away because of head injuries over the years, it needs to be addressed, which it is, and I just hope that in the future we see a great decline in the concussions and that type of an injury. I mean, it's just like back when I played, the offense had what they called a crackback block on people, and a lot of guys mm-hmm. were getting their knees torn up and that type of thing, and they ruled that out. So, you know it's going, things like that are going on, but it's not until a number of people get injured by those things that it seems like that the everybody pays attention and then they start reacting to it. And I'm just hoping that in the future, like I say, that these concussions, we see a great decrease in them, because it can have major long-term effect on players.
Definitely. And unfortunately, we've seen a lot of that recently. And Chris, you throughout your career, you were known not only for your physical play, but you were known for your smarts. You called all the signals in George Allen's defense. First of all, how difficult was George Allen's defense?
Well, it wasn't difficult by any means. It was just, it was a little complicated. I mean, we just right. had a lot of defenses and a lot of audibles, and we controlled the game right on the field. We didn't have to have somebody sending in signals. We didn't have little radios in our helmets. and we were well prepared. And, I mean, you could go into a game with, say, 30, 35 defenses that you worked on in practice, and if you saw something, saw a team doing something that you really hadn't seen before, you knew from the formation or the plays that they were running from it, you knew what defense would work best or defenses that would work best against it. We could audibleize to it right away. We didn't have to mm-hmm. wait to get to the sidelines and discuss it or try to get things straightened out at halftime. So it was a lot of fun to be able just to control things right there on the field. And I think what's happened today, the coaching staffs throughout the league, they've taken the game out of the hands of the players. There's very few players. For example, I mean, Peyton Manning is a great student of the game. And I think he's probably the prime example. He pretty much calls his own plays and does a lot of studying. And whereas otherwise the play is being sent into the quarterback and then he has the right to audibleize, but he may not have – he may be limited in what he can audibleize to, whereas from a defensive standpoint years ago and under Coach Allen, we could go to any defense we had, whether we worked on it in practice or not. I think we had like 125, 135 audibles for our defenses.
So when you talk about playing in that kind of a system, I mean, obviously then, you know, you had to have a game plan versus every team, but you get to the line of scrimmage, and what you're saying is, you know, based off of reads and how the offense presents from play to play down to down, it was really then you formating the defense. Or did you get, like, the linebackers in there? Were there people kind of co-responsible with you to get their positional players in place?
No, I mean, I controlled the whole thing. Jack Pardee was there calling signals while I was there. He came with Coach Allen, and then, of course, Jack retired, and I got stuck with doing that job. But, no, I mean, I was solely responsible for what everybody was doing on defense. But in the same token, it doesn't mean that I'm right. I mean, I was always open, and I told the guys, you know, look, if you guys feel that there's something that I could audibleize to against a particular set in a game, you know, just tell me in the huddle, and we'll make a change right then and there. Doesn't bother me a bit. So everybody contributed, and I think what made it work for us so well is that everybody on defense, I mean, even the defensive linemen, they knew what all the defensive backs and linebackers did in every defense. I mean, they weren't just limited to knowing what they did.
Right.
I mean, I could stunt the line left or right. I could do anything with them at any time, and I could do anything with the secondary I wanted to at any time. So it was just a very flexible system, and it was fun to work with.
We're talking to NFL Hall of Famer Chris Hamburger, and Chris right now, he was elected in the Hall of Fame just 2011, just now, a few months back, and exciting times for Chris Hamburger. And Chris, I look at you, man, and I say, what was the greatest experience in your career? What was the greatest year experience, the greatest moment in your career? I know it's hard, 14 years is a long time, but what is the greatest moment of your career?
Well, it's getting elected into the Hall of Fame. Prior to that, it was probably the first Pro Bowl that I got elected to, because back then the players on the other teams voted you in. And to me, that was just the ultimate honor, to have offensive players that I played against vote for me.
Right. And that is a big-time honor. And, Chris, you played, you went to the Super Bowl back in the 72 season. Ultimately, you guys would lose to the Miami Dolphins. How tough was that loss for you? And is it, are you over that loss at this point?
Oh, heck yeah. I mean, I was over it 5 minutes after the game. I mean, was over. What's the sense of dwelling on the past? You've improved by looking at what you do to have a success and what you do when you lose. You got to look at both of them. You can't just analyze a loss. But, it was very easy for me to put all that stuff behind us. I was most disappointed that we lost the game, mainly for the Washington fans. They're great, great fans. They always have been over the years, whether you've had a great team or not. And of course, Miami, not taking a thing away from them. They were just a tremendous football team. And I guess the score probably could have been a little worse than it was. We were fortunate to come out with 7 points. But, if you start letting stuff like that bother you, you just can't move forward. So, I mean, once a game was over, even during the season, I was thinking about the next game right away.
Wow.
And you mentioned your time and relationship with the fans in Washington. Talk about playing in Washington relative to the fans.
Well, they were just always so supportive. And the old stadium, RFK Stadium, it didn't seat a lot of people, but they were right there on the field. That was a very close stadium, and that was a tremendous advantage for us over the years. And, of course, now they got this huge stadium out there in Maryland, and I don't know. I had to go to the Super Bowl this year, not because I wanted to, but because I found out Saturday night before the Super Bowl game, that I'd been elected into the Hall of Fame. And, of course, we had to go down there and go to be on the field for the coin toss. And I got in that Dallas Cowboys stadium, the new one, and I thought, holy mackerel. this thing's humongous, and I'm sitting in a box up there after the coin toss, and I'm looking down at the field. The players look like ants, and, I mean, I can't even – of course, I'm old now, and my eyesight's still pretty good. I got to wear glasses to read, but I can't even see the ball when it's thrown or anything. And I thought, holy mackerel, how do people put up with this?
And Chris, you talked about being at the Super Bowl. What was your initial reaction when you heard that you were going to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
My initial reaction is that now I got to go pack a bag to get on a cotton picking airplane the next morning to get to Dallas in time. That's all I thought about.
Wow.
And, of course, I live down here in Darlington, South Carolina, and the nearest airport for us is over in Florence, and to go anywhere from Florence, you got to fly into Atlanta or Charlotte, North Carolina, to, you know, catch a connecting flight. But I was very fortunate in that Dan Snyder, who owns the Redskins, sent one of his planes to pick me up in Florence and take me down. Now, I already had the way the Hall of Fame does it, they line up the flights for all the nominees. They don't know who's going to be elected at that point. And I had a non-refundable ticket, a commercial ticket. And I told Mr. Snyder when he called to congratulate me right after they announced my election, I said, look, I've got a, he said, I don't care what you got. He said, I'm going to send a plane for you. And he said, can I get into Darlington? I said, no, I don't think you're going to land in Darlington. Florence is going to be the best bet. And so that's what we did. And but the only thing I thought about was I got to pack a bag and go to Dallas.
Now, since your retirement, have you stayed, are you close with the Redskins organization, or most specifically, Daniel Snyder?
Well, I have been since I got into the Hall of Fame, more so than ever before. But look, when it all ended, I just walked away from it. It was something I did. It was a job to me, and I tried to do it to the best of my ability all the time. And when it ended, it ended. And no, I don't go to games. I very seldom, and I hate to tell you this, but at the Super Bowl, I packed up right after the start of the third quarter and watched the rest of the game in the hotel room down there. I just didn't want to get caught up in all that traffic and everything else after the game trying to get out of there. And but I don't watch very much football on TV. I'll watch a quarter or so, whether it's professional football or whether it's college football. That's about it. I just can't sit there and watch it for hours.
Wow. And Chris, how was putting together the speech? How tough was that for you, or was it tough for you putting together that speech for your for the Hall of Fame?
Well, it really wasn't a speech, and I never put it together. I mean, I just had some thoughts in my head, and
right.
In fact, they called me and at one point, and they told us we only had six to eight minutes to speak. That's what they wanted, and so they called me and asked me if I'd written my speech. I said, no, I haven't. And I'm not going to mention who called me, but they said, well, look, you got to write stuff down. And I said, well, I've just got a few little thoughts in my head, and let's just call them talking points. And so they said, well, could you send those to us or email us or something? We have to plan for commercials. And I'm thinking, holy mackerel, what am I getting into to where we kind of worry about commercials? So, I tell you the truth, I got tired of people asking me, have you written your speech yet? To me, it was just ridiculous to even bother somebody about that. And I am upset because I think I actually exceeded 8 minutes by a little bit. But I think they have been working to try to keep the speeches as short as possible.
Right. And Chris, during your speech, you talked about twittering. Have you started twittering yet?
Oh, no. Heavens, no. let me tell you, I don't know how to do any of that stuff, nor do I want to know how.
Good for you, Chris.
I've got a cell phone. I don't carry it with me that much, but when I do, I don't even turn it on unless I got to make a call. All I know how to do is make a phone call. I know how to answer a phone call, and basically that's it. Or if I have a message, if I have it on and that stupid thing beeps at me telling me I have a message, I know how to get a message. But
right.
Other than that, and it's an antique phone too. It's the only one I've ever had. And I got it about, I guess, probably a good 10, 12 years ago. I think I've
wow.
put three batteries in it, new batteries. I'm not into all that stuff.
But at least did you go from, hi, this is Chris Hamburg, to, hi, this is Hall of Famer Chris Hamburg.
The what now?
I said when you answer your cell phone, is it, instead of it being, hi, this is Chris, to, hi, this is Hall of Famer Chris.
Oh, no, I just say hello. That's all I do.
And, Chris, do you have that Hall of Fame jacket in a safe place?
Oh, yeah, sure do. It's hanging in a closet.
And will you put it on again?
Oh, I'm sure I will somewhere along the way. I would like to go back to the Hall of Fame. God willing, if I'm still alive, I'd like to go back next year. I've never been, never toured the Hall of Fame itself. I had the opportunity when we were up there for the ceremonies. We could have gone really any time, but we didn't have that much free time, and I really didn't want to be in there when the public was in there and everything. And we had the opportunity to go in the evening after it closed, but I didn't want to do that because I knew they were going to be keeping the staff there, some of the staff, after hours, so we could go in and not be bothered by the public or anything. But I didn't want to inconvenience those folks. So I never went through it. I think I played in the Hall of Fame game my rookie year. I could be mistaken on that, and we had the opportunity as that year to go through it, and I never did. So just to go back to go through the Hall of Fame is something I would really want to do this coming year.
And hopefully you get back there to see your bust, and that's got to be an exciting thing. How was it when you saw that bust unveiled?
Well, it was very neat. I mean, and of course, my son, he was my presenter, and of course he helped me, you know, uncover it and everything. But it's a thrill. It really is, and it's a great honor. And of course, the man that made the bust, they use sculptors. It's not just one sculptor that makes all the busts. They have, I guess, six or seven or eight of them throughout the country. And the guy that made mine, he resides a little over an hour outside Dallas, Texas, and a very interesting person. And I actually flew down there after he was at a point where he needed me to come down. I mean, he's working off pictures and everything, and he needed me to come down there for just a few hours to sit and let him slap some more clay on the thing. And so that's what I did. I flew down on a Sunday and spent, I guess, about 3 or 4 hours in his studio, and then spent the night, and then jumped on a plane and came back the next day.
That's a great story. And Chris, it was a pleasure talking to you, sir. We wish you nothing but the best of luck. Thank you for coming on, and again, nothing but the best of luck for you in the future, sir.
Well, I appreciate it very much.
Take care.
All right. Y'all have fun. Bye.
All right. Chris Hamburger, one of the newest members of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and it was a pleasure talking to him. Big-time pleasure. Big-time pleasure talking to him.
Not every day you're going to get a Hall of Famer, and especially of his stature. So I got to tell you, Paul, I'm looking out the window here at hurricane update. 240 East Coast, it certainly is raining. You know, winds are picking up a bit, and it's a steady rain. Getting a little cloudy, getting a little darker, and you being Allentown Bluebell, the storm is upon us, and I'm excited that the last time we were in a tropical storm was down in North Carolina, and this is a chance time when we'll be able to experience this, you know, with our families and our children, our young children. I can't wait for you to get out there and dance and play in the rain, you know, if lightning permitting.
I want to go back to Chris Hamburger for a second. You got the sense that he was not really caught up in all the pomp and circumstance. It was just really wasn't that big of a deal for him. You got the sense that if he made it to the Hall of Fame, fine. If he didn't make it to the Hall of Fame, that's fine as well.
No, it was interesting. That's what I say. It's interesting. Not every day you're going to talk to someone who like you said, I mean, certainly had a very distinguished career. And in fact, I think what was even more interesting, or what I found more interesting, is like, you know, here you are, you go to the Super Bowl, you're getting inducted in the Hall of Fame. You know, in terms of writing his speech, you know, he comments on the fact that he just put a couple of points together and he leaves, you know, the Super Bowl because, you know, he stays kind of true to himself. He wasn't necessarily going to get caught up in something that he ordinarily doesn't get caught up in his everyday life. And he said, you know, he walked away from football and pretty much forgot about it.
Let's bring in now Giants legend and now fashion designer Carl Banks. Carl, how are you, sir?
Carl.
Hello?
There we go. Carl?
Hello?
Carl?
Hello?
Carl Banks?
No, this is not Carl. This is a caller.
Oh. We brought in the wrong caller. Now let's bring in the great Carl Banks. Carl, how are you, sir?
I am doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. How's that hurricane treating you?
Well, it's been decent so far. Irene hasn't stepped into the room yet. This is still down in South Jersey right now.
And Carl, you have a new clothing line out, G3 For Her by Carl Banks. First off, how did you get involved with this?
Well, I've been in the apparel business. I started my company, G3 Sports by Carl Banks, my second year with the Giants, and it became kind of my post-career plan, if you will. So I started it early, and it's built into a really big company now. My inspiration was David Beckham. I don't know if you're old enough to remember Starter. They were the ones who really created the whole sports apparel culture. And I was one of his first athlete endorsers. And, you know, we became friends, and I learned a lot about his business. And I said, you know, I really want to build on this model. And I started with NFL outerwear, and then I got all the other major sports leagues to give me licenses for outerwear. And then I grew it into a complete sportswear collection, you know, from sweatpants to T-shirts to hoodies. And then I said, look, I want to see if I can do this for ladies, because I'm looking at what's out there, and it's very cookie cutter, and it's, you know, very pink. So I said, you know, went to the NFL first and told them what my plan was, and I do a lot of work with Home Shopping Network. And their customers, like, you know, none of this stuff fits, none of the stuff in the market really works for us. So I partnered with Home Shopping Network, and I wanted to create a line exclusively for their customer first. So we're going to launch that on September 5th. And it's pretty exciting. We've got five or six NFL-wise that are going to come on and be on set with me and talk about, you know, active lifestyles and, you know, model of clothing and everything.
And Carl, one of the things I noticed about this fashion line, and I was actually impressed by this, but the sizes start at size 10. What was the motivation behind that?
Well, like I said, women call in and say this stuff doesn't fit. See, the thing about it is the average size American woman starts at like a 10. They don't start at a zero. I mean, the girl you see in magazines, you know, is not reflective of, you know, the general population. So what we wanted to do, and we haven't alienated smaller women. I have two other collections. I do one with Alyssa Milano, touched by Alyssa Milano. They're kind of addressed with that. But I wanted to make sure that I could reach the American woman. And when I say that, it's, you know, it's general sizing. It's real women sizing. So I didn't want to be, you know, the guy who does something really great and it only goes to a size medium. I want everybody to be able to wear the clothes and to really look great in the clothes as well.
And I think that's a great thing. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Is this a factor too, Carl, you know, of being, you know, a bigger guy most of your life? And oftentimes you hear some people are inspired by the fact that, you know, they couldn't find clothes that necessarily fit them because, as you said, especially for women, that, you know, people in this country, they buy these magazines and they think, well, oh, everyone's supposed to look like this, but they don't fit into that.
No, you're absolutely right, and it's funny you say that because one of my other inspirations for getting in the business was because I couldn't find clothes that fit or fashion that fits. You could find clothes, but it wasn't great. And that's why, you know, I always offer big and tall and all of my NFL and Major League Baseball and hockey apparel because I know that, you know, everyone should have the opportunity to wear nice clothes. And the same holds true for women. There are women who are big and tall or who may be, you know, are taller than the average girl that, you know, just won't be able to fit into a regular size medium or large because the largest and some retailers are really mediums in true sizing.
Right. We're talking to Giants great Carl Banks, and Carl Banks is into fashion design right now. He has his line coming out, G3 for her. And Carl, you look at it now, you got a big giveaway coming up on September 5th on the HSN network. This is pretty big, Carl. Talk about the giveaway.
Well, we got a lot of good, exciting things going, but we partnered with Southwest Airlines, and we're running some social media contests, and we've got, you know, we've got Jerome Bettis' mom, we've got Ryan Clark's mother, we've got Brandon Jacobs' wife, we've got Mark Ingram's mother, we've got, you know, we got a lot of Yonka Clark. So we're trying to get all of these girls engaged into their fan base, and we're going to, whoever, you know, wins the contest from whatever team, we're going to be making a charitable donation, but we're also giving away a free round trip ticket to any NFL game of the winner's choice.
Wow. And where can people find information about that?
Well, I'm on Twitter and also on Facebook, Carl Banks G3. It's Carl Banks G-I-I-I is the the tag on Twitter as well as Facebook.
And, Carl, you know, I can't let you get out of here without talking about the New York Giants.
Okay.
Kevin Boss to Oakland, Steve Smith to Philly, Terrell Thomas out for the year. O.C. Umenyiora, he has his situation out for a few weeks. Do you see the Giants taking a step back because of it, all these injuries and all these free agent departures?
Well, let's look at them. Steve Smith, his injury, he wasn't going to be available to the Giants probably before midseason or later. The Giants knew that coming in. So that was an issue that they really weren't that concerned with. They knew they had to develop because it happened last year when he got injured, and they knew going into this year they were going to have to have a third wide receiver to step up. So that part of it didn't set them back. Losing Kevin Boss probably set them back most because that's a position that Kevin was a player who you didn't have to take off the field. He was a pretty good blocker, pretty good route runner and receiver. So he gave the run-pass option availability to the offense all the time. Now you're even looking at a guy, Travis Beckham, who's going to be a receiver, not a blocker, and you got a guy like Bear Pascoe, who has to come into the game on rundowns. Pretty predictable. And then Terrell Thomas, no one expected that, but that football, you know, but that's going to hurt. I think Kevin Ball, his departure, and then losing Terrell Thomas are the two biggest losses, but I'm not sure that they'll take a step back as a result. I think they have to have some guys step up, but there's way too much talent on both sides of the ball, and, you know, OC is going to be back, but that's the deepest position on the football team is that defensive line. So they'll be okay there. But it's going to be interesting to begin with. You really want to start the season with every available man, because when you look at the Dallas Cowboys, who certainly are formidable, but then the Philadelphia Eagles, who just, you know, they're going to be as good as advertised. People are waiting for them to take a step back, but they're going to be as good as advertised. And so you want to be able to compete in the NFC East, and then they play the AFC East, which is not an easy division either. So you want to have all your guys available as soon as possible. But, you know, it's going to be a long year, tough year for the entire division because of the out-of-conference games they play. You know, they play that NFC South also with Atlanta and New Orleans. So there will be some opportunities for the Giants to get themselves healthy and get on the right track.
You talked about Philly. They added all these pieces. Is it their division to lose at this point?
Well, you know what? They'll be as good as advertised. I don't know if it's their division to lose because, you know, they have a tough time within the division. And it's kind of like the old NFC East. No one runs away with it. Teams will be hanging around within the division for a while, and it normally comes down to the last couple weeks of the year to determine who wins that division.
And Eli Manning came out a few weeks back, says he belongs in the same sentence with Tom Brady. Do you agree with that, Carl?
I wouldn't expect him to say anything else.
Right.
I mean, I would think that there was something wrong with him if he says, I'm not quite at that level and I'm just going to, you know, just plug along. I think, you know, if you're a quarterback and you need to send a message to your team and your offense in terms of leadership, you step up and you say something like that. I don't think he was being boastful. Now, if you subtract his interception numbers and leave his touchdown numbers up there in the yardage, he'd be a top three quarterback. Right now, I think their offense is a top five or six. But, you know, he had 20-something interceptions.
Right.
You know, so 25. Cut those in half and see where he is, you know?
And do you think he cuts those in half?
I would like to think if he's half as good as he say he is, he'll take it upon himself to get it done. I think he's a smart enough guy to make better decisions with the football. That was kind of that blip on the radar screen when you look at the whole body of work of Eli Manning. He's never been prone to that level of interception, but, you know, I think a lot of that also, guys, is you've got to look at the balance of their offense. They've got to be able to run the football. If you're going to pass it a lot, the susceptibility of interception is going to be high.
And you saying that about Eli, was it a mistake for this Giant organization to let Plaxico Burress go, given the history of those two?
How do you let someone go who wasn't there? I mean, he was gone. I think, in all fairness, and I don't want to sound like I'm completely defending the Giants, but when you look at this objectively, the Giants had moved on from Plaxico Burress 2 years ago. So they had an opportunity to re-sign him. They made him an offer. He got a better one from anyone. I mean, the Jets offered more money than anyone in the NFL to Plaxico Burress. So if you're Plaxico Burress, you're taking $3 million guaranteed when everyone else is offering him $1 million, $1.5 million with incentives. So it's, you know, the Giants didn't let him go. They made an offer to get him back. He got a better offer, and he took it. And I'm more than happy for Plaxico because I think he's a hell of a guy and hell of a talented guy. And could he have helped the Giants? Absolutely. But you have to have a you have to have a kind of a sense of the history, his history with the Giants. Would he be walking back into a situation and an environment that would not be amenable to his style of personality? And it was a clash for the entire time he was with the Giants. So to say that he, you know, he got away is, you know, maybe not that bad of a thing if he wasn't going to be at his best as a Giant. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I thought it was a good situation for Plax to get a fresh start. And
yeah.
I think the Jets is a good situation for him.
No, I agree. I mean, if he's going to walk back into an environment that was not, you know, as functional as it could be in order for him to be as good as he could be, I just think it would have been a grind. And, you know, for him
right.
to have a fresh start, I think it's great for him. You know, Giants fans
well,
selfishly would love to have him back, but I don't know if that would have been a good situation.
Well, let me ask you this then, Carl. I mean, my take on it is this. Certainly I agree. If he doesn't come in to New York and play up to his level, he was in a no – I mean, it wasn't even a no win. It was a total lose for him. But losing him to a Jets organization that certainly is offensively more equipped, if he does play better, how does this – now, how does it make the Giants organization look?
It depends on how the Giants finish up, you know, quite frankly. I mean, like I said, they had two guys, one guy in particular who really stepped up is Hakeem Nicks. And, you know, they've moved on. I mean, once he was gone and no longer part of the team, obviously they have to, you know, the NFL doesn't stop, so they have to make, you know, whatever adjustments they needed to make. But if he goes on to have a great year and the Giants don't have a good year, I'm sure you'll hear it in New York. But that's not to guarantee that he would have the same year, great year, in New York if he were here.
And he brought up the Jets, and Carl, you're in New York. Is it now a Jets town, or is New York still a Giants town?
Boy, I tell you, it's, you know, when you listen to the radio, sports talk radio, it's a hotly debated situation. I do think the Jets are trending younger. You know, they have a lot of young fans and, you know, guys that are really jumping on board with them. And, hey, look, they're winning a lot of football games. And as long as they continue to win, the debate will rage on. You know, the Giants are kind of establishment. The Jets are, you know, kind of the rebels who are trying to really stake their, you know, put their flag in the ground and say, hey, it's our town. So, you know, both teams will determine that with their win-loss records and championships. And, you know, the Jets are, you know, they're screaming because they won a lot of football games over the last couple of years. So
very much so.
Until they win a championship, I'm sure Giants fans will say, hey, look, until you get a ring, don't call us.
I agree with you, Carl. I totally agree with you. And again, everybody, make sure you support Carl Banks, G3 for her, September 5th on HSN. He will be debuting that collection in the clothing line. And Carl, where can we find information about this clothing line, and where can we buy some of these great products?
Well, I have my men's products are in Macy's, Lord & Taylor, a lot of sporting goods stores around the country, and Team Shop. But G3 for Her is going to launch exclusively on HSN on September 5th. And my first show is at 1 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, but we go through the entire day until 8 o'clock that evening. So, and then they can also go to hsn.com and start to look for it as well, and they can pre-order some of the products.
And, Carl, full disclosure here, I am a lifelong Eagles fan, so maybe you can hook a brother up with some Eagles gear.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just, you know, get my folks your address, and I take care of it.
Appreciate it, Carl. Carl, it was a pleasure talking to you. We wish you nothing but the best of luck with this clothing line, man, and continue some of these great things that you're doing.
I really appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Take care, and be all right in that hurricane, man.
Yeah, we're going to stay safe.
All right.
All right.
Carl Banks, New York Giants great. And Carl Banks has a great clothing line coming out. He's a great analyst, I have to say. He knows his stuff, and he had some great points there. And I agreed with him. You know, no matter how Plaxico it turns out for him with New York, I just thought it was time for Burris to move on. I just thought it was time for him to move on and get that fresh start anywhere, whether it be the Giants, I mean, not the Giants, whether it be the Jets or anywhere, Philadelphia. There was talk of Philadelphia possibly being in a mix at one point or another. But I just thought it was a great situation for him to go and get away from the Giants organization and go to the Jets organization and kind of get that fresh start.
Well, I mean, and I told you, I disagree. I think, I mean, I don't disagree from his perspective. I ultimately believe that, you know, Plaxico Burress will, if he gets back to, you know, that level, he'll find success wherever he plays. I think the Giants are, they missed him, and I continue to believe they are going to miss him. He's not a player you replace that easily.
Let's take a caller, actually. Hello, you're on Go For It. Maybe he's stuck in a hurricane, I guess. But, I mean, you look at it, and I look at it, and I don't know. I disagree because I like the wide receivers. I like Hakeem Nicks. I like Mario Manningham. I like those guys. And I thought that they didn't necessarily need Plex. I mean, Mario Manningham and especially Hakeem Nicks, as Carl pointed out, I was very impressed with Hakeem Nicks. He's a playmaking, big, physical wide receiver. And I like him for the New York Giants. I like him a lot, but you're right. I mean, Steve Smith, you know, Carl said he wouldn't be around until October, and some reports have it that Steve Smith could be ready a little sooner than that. But, I mean, I think, you know, you can only do what you can do. Apparently, the Giants organization, like you pointed out earlier, Jeremy, were a little salty about the whole situation with Steve Smith. And I thought, you know, with Steve Smith now missing, maybe Plex could have slid in there, but at the same time, I just think in terms of team chemistry, I think it was the best move for the New York Giants to move Plaxico Burress along. I really do. But Terrell Thomas, we talked about Terrell Thomas. I think that's going to be a big loss as well. Go ahead. You were going to make a point.
Well, I mean, I'm going to tell you, Paul, I'm just surprised. I think ultimately the gaps that this Giants team has to make up offensively, they have lost some weapons, and to think that they're just going to come out of that totally unscathed, I question that.
Well, I do question in terms of, you know, missing Kevin Boss, a guy who was Eli's man. That was one of Eli's guys. And missing him and Steve Smith, you know, granted, whether it comes back October or what have you, he's going to be somebody I believe they'll miss. But missing him and missing Manningham, you know, that's not Manningham, missing Steve Smith and then missing a Kevin Boss and then also missing a Terrell Thomas now. I mean, those are three big guys, I think. And do you replace that? I mean, Carl Banks believes they can. And I think the Giants are a talented team, and he's right. I think the NFC East is going to be a battle this year. I think Dallas is going to be better, and I think the Giants are going to be the same, if not better. So I think it's going to be a battle with the NFC East, and I think Philadelphia, obviously, is going to be as advertised. But I do have some questions, obviously. You have questions. I think in today's NFL, you're going to have questions with any team. Reality is, with the salary cap, you can't sign everybody. So there's going to be some gaps and some holes somewhere. But I just think right now, with the way the NFC East is presently constructed, it's going to be a battle, and they're going to be banging and battling all year long. And the NFC East football is nothing like it. It's great. Great. Great thing. Great football. Nothing like NFC East football. And if you don't like NFC East football, you're stupid. We want to thank Carl Banks for stopping by. Again, make sure you stay tuned and check out HSN on September 5th. Carl Banks at 1 o'clock a.m. Eastern time. Carl Banks will be debuting G3's For Her. his clothing line. And again, this is for, it's the sizes start at size 10, so you don't have to be a stick to get into these clothes. So make sure you support Carl Banks and go to his Twitter page, Carl Banks G3, and those, it's Carl Banks G III, three I's. So make sure you support that. We also want to thank Chris Hanberger. Make sure you support anything that he's doing. Again, he's a Hall of Famer, and it was a pleasure talking to him. And also, we want to thank model Camille Lim, and make sure you support her. Make sure you go to her Twitter page, Camille D. Lim. That's her Twitter page. Make sure you go, Camille D. Lim. Make sure you support it. And make sure you go to our Twitter page at GoForItGant. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/PGant, where you can listen to this great show and other great shows. For Jeremy Espy, this is Paul Gant. And make sure you follow the show on Twitter at GoForItGant. See you later. Be safe. Stay away from windows and all other things, because the winds will be gusting and things may be coming against the windows. The hurricane, if you're in the East Coast, be safe. Hurricane Irene is coming. Everybody have a great weekend. See you later. Bye.